Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another program, Dare to be Different. It's just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming, medium wave 15488 and satellite Islam. And we are truly, truly blessed. Last couple of days hasn't been too cold, but we've had some unseasonal rain. And now the brilliant sunshine once again. And really, really, when we look at people out in other parts of the world, when winter sets in, they see very little of the sun. And we are truly grateful, and we see what's happened in our own country, and we have shelter over our heads, I think, for that, even just for that, we have to be truly grateful. This morning we're going to be doing something very different, and we're going to be talking to something that we haven't touched on this program before. We've been talking lots about composting and so forth, but people have come in, and technology has made it such that people are able to advance, and we're going to be chatting about some of those things. This morning we've got a wonderful guest on, and that's Karen Haran. And Karen comes from something, or an organization called Earth Probiotic Recycling Solutions. Hi, good morning, Karen.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you very much. And Karen, we're going to be talking about Earth Probiotics Recycling Solutions. Just tell us something about your background. Where do you come in from, and how do you get involved with this?
Well, it all started. My family and I, we lived in China for many years. Came back to South Africa about 6 years ago, and I decided that I would like to do something in the gardening field. I love gardening. I love recycling, and I started off with a worm farm. And I was able to recycle quite a lot of food waste through a worm farm. But there's still a lot of food waste that you can't feed to a worm farm, like cooked food, meat, onions, citrus, etc. So while some food could be recycled, some food was still being thrown away. So having done some research, I discovered bokashi, which is a Japanese word. It means fermented organic matter. Was invented by a soil scientist in Japan. And through bokashi, you are able to recycle 100% of food waste. That includes cooked and raw food, meat, seafood, citrus, etc., and you are then able to compost this where it all turns back to soil. So this for me,
carry on.
Sorry. So this for me was a wonderful thing, and we started a business, and today we are 6 years old. We have graduated from, you know, we manage households, so you at home can manage this process, as well as we can upscale it to manage huge quantities of food waste, equivalent to a municipality or a food processing plant.
Thank you very much. I think that's a very good insight, and you've taken us to some things. Now, this journey from China to South Africa, and you say you've been involved in gardening. How different is gardening in China to South Africa?
It is quite different in terms of here in South Africa. We are very lucky in that we have space. You know, whether it is just a small little garden, we are able to garden on our balconies if we live in an apartment, to, you know, depending on the size of your property. In China, unless you live out in the rural areas, it is quite difficult. And then, of course, you get the weather extremes. You get monsoon seasons in the summer. It gets very cold some parts of China, minus 20-odd degrees. So it does become a bit of a challenge. We lived in the city, so there was no opportunity for us to garden. So I couldn't wait to get back and put my hands into the soil and to grow things, which is what we do now. We have a vegetable garden. We grow all sorts of things. We make lots and lots of compost. So it was lovely. We really have enjoyed being back from China.
You know, one of the things that you mentioned and that always piques my interest is just, you know, the ability to put your hands back into soil. And I mean, it seems such a, you know, mundane and something that is so simple. Why is it so important for people to be able to put your hands back into the soil? Because many people say, well, soil is, you know, it's dirty and why should we be doing? And there's lots of other people who are saying, there's lots of, research being done about how therapeutic it is to have your hands in soil.
Very much so. It has been proven that by just working with soil, digging, planting, doing all sorts of things in your garden, you release an endorphin, plus there are microbes in the soil that you are breathing in, you are touching, they're soaking through your skin, and it is proven to be good for you. You are happier, healthier. I mean, there is that old saying that, you know, people in the old days, they used to say, you know, give a child a tablespoon of soil before he's 8 and he will always have a healthy immune system. So I believe that, you know, as children, we always played barefoot outside. We didn't have the technology that we did today. So everything we did, we did outside in our gardens or in the felt. And I think people were healthier back then than they are today. So it does make one feel happy. I certainly feel happy working in the garden. I can't wait for the weekend. My Saturdays are designed for being in the garden, and it really feels like a good day out.
Now, you know, you've mentioned something so important that, you know, with advancements in technology, we seem to have lost the touch, and people don't really want to get into the soil, and our children don't know what it is to be out or playing the soil, whether it's barefoot or just dirtying their hands. And, you know, it brings, now some people say, you know, it brings that the child back into you. When you get into the soil, you feel at one with nature, one with earth, and you feel, you know, that closeness. And like you said, endorphins and so forth released. And that is something that is missing. And I know that whilst, you know, technology moves on, which is a good thing, but also it could be disastrous because we find a whole generation would have never put their hand in soil, would never played with soil, would have never been able to walk barefoot. And that is a tragedy.
I quite agree with you, and yet when you talk to people about, especially young people, we talk to people about gardening, about growing your own food, which anybody can do regardless of the size of your property, and youngsters will say, yes, I remember my granny, she always grew pumpkins, beans, carrots, there was always something growing in our garden regardless of the size. So while our younger generation remembers gardening and food gardening, it is not something that comes naturally to them. So for most youngsters, the idea of getting their hands dirty is not a great thing. But I foresee that it is going to become our future. We just have to look at what the cost of food is today. And I think more and more people are inspired to grow their own.
You know, that brings me to the next question about China and food security. I was reading an article and saying that, you know, in China, people, no matter how small a space it is, they try and grow some of this stuff, whether it's their herbs or whatever it is. And food security is so important. You know, we find that the astronomical cost of just simple foods at one time you could just buy and say no cost attached to it is now 3 and 4 times the amount of money. So everybody's looking at food security. Now, you've just mentioned that maybe that would be a way for us in the future. How do you see food security? Because, you know, when you look at Chelsea coming up and you look at lots of things happening, that the world is moving towards food security. Your thoughts on that?
So, exactly right. And I think that it is such a simple thing to do, and it is something that anybody can do. You don't need to have a green thumb. You don't need to have any experience in growing food. I think as long as you are able to push a seed into the ground, take a little bit of care of the seed in the beginning, you will be able to grow food. You know, a family of four, the only space you need is the size of a door. You can grow all the vegetables that you need on that small piece of, you know, that small space.
You know, and it's been proven over and over, the size of a door and, you know, square foot gardening has lots of benefits. But unfortunately, it hasn't been translated into action to people in cities, you know, people in farms and people, especially the indigenous people. I find that they definitely get into trying, even spinach or Morocco or whatever they want, and they'll try and grow that. But by and large, other people are sort of oblivious and say, well, we just go to a supermarket and buy things. But we're missing the point of, I think the study saying people are now concerned, wanting to know what goes in from the time the seed is in the ground to the time it is harvested, what is put in, is there enough poisons put in, are there enough, you know, things that would be detrimental to our health? Do you think that coming through?
I think more and more people are educating themselves. There is more education around what we are eating. People are becoming a little more concerned. And I think possibly it has to do with the fact that everything that you pick up, you look at twice. It's the price. Do I want to buy this? Can I afford to buy this? Is this going to be good for me? And I think people are concerned. I think today we are seeing more and more diseases, more and more different types of cancers. It's not only affecting older people, it is young children that are being affected by these illnesses. and people are more aware about where their food comes from and, you know, pesticides and insecticides, which are harmful to soil, to plants, and to humans. There's no doubt about that. So I think that, you know, we as a society, we need to take action and we need to look out for ourselves. We need to ask these questions. How is my food grown? What goes into it? And while, you know, the new buzzword on organic foods, there is, you know, reasons for it. There are people that only buy organic. There are certain people that don't agree with that. For me, it's just about we want a chemical-free food, that it's grown naturally, that if we eat meat, the animals are pasture-reared, not feedlot. You know, I think everything as natural and as free from any chemical is the way we should be looking forward, certainly with anything that we are eating.
Again, just your experience in China, you know, have you found that there's a move similar to that, or is it because the population is so huge that they haven't got time for that, or do people still take that into consideration, planting a little bit of their own space? Because the article I've read is saying that every bit of space that they have, the Chinese people are planting whatever they can for their well-being. Is that correct?
That does seem to be correct, and while we were there, we did spend quite a lot of time out in the in the rural community, seeing what they were doing. It was quite interesting that even then, every home had a geyser, a solar geyser, and you know, we discovered that these were cheap. They were costing less than $10 per household to install these. So people, and I think it's more around a cost saving rather than environmental conservation thing. But you are correct in that where there was a square inch of available space, food was being grown. China's also had, you know, throughout their history, they've used night soil as a fertilizer. Here in South Africa, we might think that's quite odd, where, you know, people would collect all the human waste in the mornings, and it would be probably treated a little bit, and then that would be used to fertilize food. We would think that would be, you know, something that's quite gross. But, you know, it's been done for centuries. And while I don't really like the idea of thinking about fertilizing food with human waste, I certainly think that we can do that naturally with our own food waste. So our food waste currently is picked up by a service provider. It goes to landfill. Whereas we can take that and we can put that back to turn that back into a compost in order to feed our food plants as well as our ornamental gardening.
You know, you also spoke about coming in from an experience of worm farming. Now, worm farming and, you know, the worm waste, I think many people are aware, some may not be aware. Just tell us how beneficial it is, you know, to have the worm. While we're going to move on to Bokashi, but before we go on, tell us about the worm and why. And what is your experience with worm farming?
I think worm farming is very practical. It is something very easy. Young children seem to love it, to dig into the soil and pull up some wriggling earthworms. And composting earthworms are able to process any organic matter. And what they excrete is a very, very nutrient-rich compost. A little goes very far. As I say, it's a super, very, very easy process. You can have a small worm farm at home. Some people even have it in their kitchen, feed fresh food waste to the worm farm daily, as well as it can be upscaled on a commercial level where, you know, a ton or so can be fed to a windrow of worms or a worm farm per day. So to give you some example, ordinary compost would sell for about 400 rand per cubic meter, where vermicast, which is what earthworms excrete, sells for around between 2,000 to 3,000 rand per cubic meter. So it's a much higher value nutrient-rich compost than just compost made from organic matter, which might be garden waste, it might be chicken manure, it might be cattle waste.
And, you know, it's not just the waste, it is also, the, you know, the liquid that you know, the tea that is derived from the earthworm that is so valuable, because then that is diluted. Is that correct?
That is correct. So the liquid, which is also excreted by earthworms, is also highly prized by anybody who has an earthworm farm. It is usually diluted 50-50, and it is used as a liquid fertilizer. The beauty of using vermicastings or the liquid that comes out of an earthworm farm is you can't burn anything. So you can't over-fertilize. It is very rare that anybody has killed off a plant because they've added too much. It's a very gentle yet powerful fertilizer, much loved by earthworm farmers.
And you know, you have different methods of farming the earthworms. You have them in containers and you have them, you know, smaller and bigger. Tell us, you know, what would be ideal for a person who is doing his own gardening at home? What size and what type of earthworm, container would be suitable?
I always think that bigger is always better, because earthworms in the right environment, as in they are kept at an ambient temperature, they are given enough water, they are fed enough food, they are kept in a perfect environment, they will produce, I think it's every 45 days, an earthworm will lay an egg. And within this egg, depending on how mature the earthworm is, they will lay between 20 and 200 baby earthworms will be born from this egg. So very quickly, depending on the size worm farm you have, it can become sort of quite overpopulated. So I always think bigger is better. And a container needs to be placed in a fairly shaded and protected area. It doesn't want to be in the sunlight. It doesn't want to be in a drafty area. Needs to be fed once a week. It needs to be watered, kept moist. So, and various, you know, people have been quite ingenious with recycling certain containers, whether it be plastic or other types of containers, and you can go as big as you like. So for me, anything from sort of half a cube and up is better.
Okay, so half a cube and up is better. And is there, you know, just again from economic point of view, costing, is it expensive to run an earth farm or an earthworm?
It is not expensive to run it. It depends on how much money you want to put into either making one yourself or buying an earthworm farm. But running it is not expensive at all, because you are basically feeding it with organic material that you would have thrown away. So you would be feeding it either fresh food, or you would be feeding it bokashi fermented food waste, as well as material that would come out of your garden. So you also add in some compost that you've made. You'd maybe add a little bit of old potting soil, some leaves, maybe some cardboard that you're recycling that's come from your home. So you are basically feeding this farm with something that would have been a waste product anyway. So really the cost is just the setup, making, buying a worm farm, and then, of course, the earthworms.
Well, thank you very much. We're going to go for a news break. When we come back, we'll continue. Stay tuned.
Did you know that gardening is the fastest growing hobby in the world? Islam highly recommends planting trees and urges people to protect them, to the extent that planting a tree is considered as an act of worship, for which special prayer is recommended. The Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Unless you are compelled, do not cut down a tree." So join Ismail Faryava every Sunday between 8:30 and 9:30 a.m. on the program Dare to Be Different.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Just tuned in. My name is Ismail Faryava. A program Dare to Be Different. Just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming Midway 1548 in Satellite Islam. This morning we're going to be talking about something that we haven't touched before, and that's Bokashi. We've got a wonderful guest, and that's Karen Haran. She comes from the Earth's Probiotic Recycling Solutions, and she's going to share some wonderful information. She's spoken to us about a little bit about China, a little bit about worm farming, and now we're going on to Bokashi. It may not be a word that many of you are familiar with. It does sound strange, but like Karen said at the beginning, it comes from the Japanese language. Oh, hi, good morning, Karen.
Hello, good morning. Good morning to your listeners.
Thank you very much. Tell us Bokashi, Japanese word. What does it mean?
Bokashi is a Japanese word and means organic fermented matter. And that is exactly how Bokashi is produced. It is fermented in anaerobic containers. It is brewed with a consortium of bacteria, fungus, and yeast. It is dried. It kind of looks a little bit like a consistency. It looks a little bit like Pronutro. And this is the magic ingredient that one layers between food waste to prevent it from rotting.
Well, now, you know, when we talk about Bokashi and you've given us, you know, fermented organic matter, the word fermented, tell us what is the fermentation process in this whole thing?
So what we do is the Bokashi itself is fermented first of all. Once it is dried, many of the microorganisms, they go dormant and they wait for a food source, which in this case is food waste. Bokashi is added to food waste in layers, and once that container is full, it is again set aside to complete fermentation. So in many cultures, I'm thinking Korea particularly, they like Japanese as well. They like pickled food, which is fermented. It is good for your stomach. It is good for your colon. They see these foods as a healthy alternative to processed or cooked foods. So what we see is the container that one adds the food waste and your Bokashi, we see it as a stomach. It is basically pickling and fermenting this food waste. It prevents the food waste from rotting. There's no odors, no methane gases. And once that food waste has finished fermenting, when you open that bin, your food waste is going to look exactly like what you added. So your banana peel will be bright yellow. Your orange skins will be orange. You'll recognize the pasta shell. It has been perfectly preserved. It is now then ready to be composted into a compost heap, which will contain garden waste and maybe a little bit of cardboard, and it then breaks down very rapidly.
Now, you know, talking about Bokashi, you know, it's something that's sort of not very much, or people are not familiar with it. It is, and like you said, you've been here for the last 6 years and you started this. Tell us something about it. How, you know, the process has now come into the country. How widespread is it? Are people, you know, picking up on this particular process? Take us through that.
When we first started 6 years ago, our first year in business, people looked at us as if we were mad. You know, what we are trying to do is change people's habits. So for most people, they don't think about food waste because it is something that is just scraped off into your dustbin. The bags are put into your wheelie bins. Once a week, somebody takes it away. We don't think about it. So once it's emptied into your dustbin, that whole process has left your head. So for us to change and educate people on why you should be doing something positive with your food waste has taken quite a while, but at the same time it has gained momentum. Bokashi is not a new process. It is not something that we Earth Probiotic have invented. There are many, many countries in the world that already use it and have been using it for a while. You know, countries like Australia, America, many countries in the East. The Thai army, for instance, has been Bokashi fermenting their food waste when the army is out in rural areas for many years now. There is and was no waste service provided to manage the food waste of an army wherever they might be. So they have managed their food waste for a long time.
So whilst we're saying, you know, that many countries are using it, in South Africa, there's been a slow uptake. Is that correct?
It has been a slow uptake, and I think that is because we haven't had to think about what we do with our food waste. In Japan, for example, Japan is a very, very small country. It has a lot of people. It has a lot of people to feed. It doesn't have the agricultural space other countries like South Africa has. Much of their food is imported. Organics to landfill has been banned in Japan for, I think, over 50 years now. So what do Japanese households do with their food waste? So what they do is they collect their food waste. They add their Bokashi once a week. A farmer will come through in his tractor. He will pick up the bucket of food waste, and in thanks, he will leave a basket of produce that he produces. So the farmer needs the bokashi food waste, because at the same time, no chemical products goes into the small agriculture that they do have. So they haven't used pesticides and insecticides, no chemical fertilizers, also for many, many years now. So what is the alternative? They need to go natural and organic. So the farmer benefits from the fermented food waste. The housewife benefits because what would she do with her food waste? You can't throw it away anywhere. So they have this wonderful, symbiotic relationship where the farmer needs the housewife needs the farmer, and it works brilliantly. So they've had to look for ways of managing their food waste. Here in South Africa, we haven't had to be bothered by that because we've always had a service provider pick it up once a week and it goes somewhere. Today, it's a different thing. The municipalities are already talking about legislation in 2020 where no organics will go to landfill. In other words, food waste as well as garden waste, which now currently goes to landfill, will be banned. So we will have to, here in South Africa, think about what are we going to do with our food waste. So while it's taken us 6 years, the fact that we are still here, we still have customers, we have households, we have corporates, we have universities, we have schools that already manage their food waste using the system. It is going to be a culture where we will have to think about what am I going to do with it.
Well, I must say to you, it's going to be a bit paradigm shift. You know, mind shift, when you think about it, you know, all of us are so used to just dumping it. Like you said, now wheelies and takes away. And like you said, feed the soil, not landfills. And I think that is what legislation is going to be talking about. And we would be then forced. But before being forced, I think we need to understand, and you spoke about the symbiotic relationship between the farmer and the housewife. And I think that's an excellent way of doing things. But it's not going to be easy, I must say to Karen, because, this mind shift, is not easy to change. Now, you know, whilst you've taken us through all of that, now tell us, how would we use bokashi? How would we, as individual wanting to start with this particular thing, before it becomes legislation, want to change this mindset, want this paradigm shift to happen, how would we be able to do all of that?
It is very easy to use. It's a very simple process. We supply containers which have, it's about a 20-liter bucket. It has a little tap on the front. It has a strainer which sits at the bottom of the bucket. Food waste is collected daily. So in your kitchen, you'd have a small container, let's say an old ice cream container. You'd add all your food waste into that over the day, and that is all food waste. Cooked food, raw food, meat, seafood, small bones, eggshells, tea bags, fruit peelings, absolutely everything. You'd add it into your little container at the end of the evening, once dinner has been served and the kitchen is being cleaned up. That container of food waste is added into the bucket. A handful of bokashi is sprinkled over the surface area. You mash it down lightly just to get rid of any air pockets, because it is an anaerobic process. You don't want any oxygen in the bin. You put the lid on, and tomorrow you repeat the process. So you continue adding food waste, bokashi, in layers until that bin is full. Then that bin is set aside. You put it in your garage, in your garden shed, outside your kitchen door, and you would leave it for 2 weeks. So while the bottom half of the bin has already fermented, the top half needs to go through that fermenting process. Once that bin has fermented after the two-week process, then you have three options of managing it. So as I said, once you open that bin, it's going to be perfectly pickled. So it's the same process as if you'd pickled an onion. A pickled onion will have a very, very, very long shelf life. A raw onion will eventually go rotten. But your food waste in your bin has now been perfectly pickled. So you can either compost it, and you would compost it with anything that comes out of your garden, leaves, pruning, small twigs, as well as some of the recyclable material that comes out of your house, which would be cardboard or some newspaper. Maybe you have some chickens that you have, so some of their bedding, straw, for instance. So you would compost it, you would bury it, or you can feed it to a worm farm. So while traditionally you can't feed raw citrus, pineapple, uncooked meat, dairy to a worm farm because it will rot and it will smell. Once these food wastes have been bokashi fermented first, you can very safely feed it to a worm farm.
Would that also be applicable to a compost heap? Would you throw it into a compost heap without any challenges?
Yeah, you know, you are dealing with food waste, so it is, as I said, it's easy enough to do. It will require a little bit of, it is not a matter of emptying your bin onto your compost heap. You would actually have to add it into your compost heap. So I talk about making lasagna compost heaps. So if you think about the lasagna sheets as food waste, thin layers, and you think about the sauce as being the garden waste, thick layers. So let's say you've now got a bin of fermented food waste and you've got a heap of garden waste. What you do is you'd start off with a nice thick layer of garden waste, then a thin layer of food waste and garden waste, and you'd keep layering it, keeping all the food waste towards the center of the compost heap. Once you've emptied your bin in layers in this compost heap, you'd throw over the entire heap another thick layer of garden waste, which will act like a blanket. So it will trap any, it will trap the heat, it will trap the moisture, and it will trap any odors that might be emitted. So if you do it with care, there should be no problems with composting. And that compost heap will go from fermented food waste to usable compost within 3 months.
Okay, let's just go back. If you didn't want to compost it, and once you've taken it out of your bokashi bucket, could you use it in your garden, or is that not still usable?
You would have to bury it. So if you didn't want to make a compost heap, or you just don't have time, you would dig narrow trenches. So you could dig between, let's say, on the outside of your garden bed, between your ornamental or even in your vegetable garden. So you would dig deepish trenches, let's say about 20 to 30 centimeters, especially if you have pets that like to dig. If you don't have pets, you can dig at about 10 to 20 centimeters. You would then add the food waste again in thin layers. So you'd add some food waste, add some soil on top, maybe a little more food waste, and then you'd fill that trench back up with the soil that you dug out. We have customers who just they've decided they're going to do like a checkerboard gardening in their small townhouse. They dig a little square of their lawn, they dig that up, they dig deep, they throw the whole bucket in, they put the soil back, they put the lawn square back. So you can either compost or you can dig it into an existing garden. So the food waste never goes on top of anything, whether it's in your garden or in your on your compost heap. It always goes into.
And in this case, you know, everything can be, you know, put into bokashi. So it's, whether it's, you know, fish bones, you know, bones from meat, you know, citrus, pineapple, things that normally, potatoes, onions, anything that you wouldn't put into a normal compost heap could be put into a bokashi bucket.
Quite right. And as I said, it's absolutely everything, 100% of food waste can be added. There's only two things that you would not add to your recycling bucket, and that would be food that has already gone rotten, and that is rotten as in it smells, it is just a horror. Food that's gone past sell-by date is fine to add. Food, you know, sometimes you get home, you bought a bag of tomatoes and one or two of them have got a bit squished, those can go in. So, you know, squished food, bananas that have gone brown, cheese that has got a little bit of white mold, all that can go in, but not rotten food and not excess liquid. So let's say you have fried up a whole bunch of fish, or you fried up some chips and you've got a couple of cups of oil, that doesn't go in. But otherwise everything else can go in.
So you've got on-site training. Tell us about this on-site training. If anyone, what would that mean? Would you train? If I had to come in, would you train me, or is it for companies only, or how does that work?
You know, we speak to people every day. We would be more than happy to talk anybody through the process, troubleshoot any problems that you are having. Our solution is for everybody, whether you're at home, corporates. So when we deal with a corporate, we go in, we teach the kitchen staff on separation of different waste streams. We teach them how to manage our process. And then, of course, on the other side, we teach the gardeners or the landscaping staff on managing the process, whether they are composting, which is usually the case, or feeding to a worm farm. So that is the training that we provide. We also do this at school, at different schools. Lots of the schools, the children are involved in managing the food waste. We work with some schools where they have vegetable gardens, where at some schools the food that they grow is actually the only food, the only meal of the day that they get. So we will provide gardening training, recycling, managing our process, but we are always available, all of us, at any time to speak to anybody.
And are you open on Sundays as well?
We are not open on Sundays. We are open actually Monday to Friday, but Saturdays we are usually somewhere. We do promotions at the garden centers where our products are stocked. This weekend we are at Grand Designs. We're exhibiting there. So Saturdays we are kind of a little bit everywhere, but Sundays we are not open.
And your address, I think, is Lifestyle Business Park. Is that where Lifestyle Garden Center is, in the same building or in the same complex?
It is where Lifestyle Garden Center is, but we are actually in the business park, which is sort of behind and underneath Lifestyle. That is where we are situated.
Okay, so that's Art and Lifestyle, and it's on Corner Bayers, Nadir, and Aisterhoek Drive. Thank you very much, Karen. I've learned so much this morning, and I'm sure our listeners have, and I'm sure we're going to pique lots of people's interest in this particular solution. It says Earth Robotic Solutions, and I know that lots of people would want to look at alternatives, and you've given us some wonderful ideas. But you take care. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Thank you very much. It's been a delightful time to speak to you. Thank you.
Thanks.